Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Soho Strangler Week by Murdmile. To accompany the series, here's a few extra details from the police files and the court records to aid your enjoyment and maybe even help you crack the case. This episode is about how the newspaper's reporting of the murders changed eyewitness testimony. Now, this is a problem. As the people get their information from newspapers, and the people believe that what they're reading in those newspapers is factually accurate, then what eyewitnesses to the murder believe they have seen can actually change when they start to question their own senses based on what they read in those newspapers. Now, I'm going to show you this by taking you back to Stanley King. So Stanley King was the boyfriend of Dutch Leia, the third victim of the Soho Strangler. We've got two statements by him here. The first statement on the 9th of May 1936, on the day that Dutch Leia's body was discovered. It's 8 pages long. I won't read you the whole thing, but what I'll do is I'll read a bit at the start and a bit when he discovered the body. We can kind of dip into that, but it's all pretty much factual. And then statement number two, and this was on the 13th of May 1936, so 4 days after the body was discovered. But more importantly, the press had really gone into overdrive about this around this point. They weren't factually accurate. They weren't accurately really reporting the murder. What they were doing was trying to sensationalize it, make it really exciting, start talking about a Soho Strangler, start talking about a serial killer or a monster. So I'll read his second statement and you'll see how his details have started to change and how his recollection is based on what he's read in the newspapers. And it is written right there at the start that he has got this from newspapers. So let's dip in. The first statement, 9th of May 1936, this is Stanley King's first statement taken on the day when he discovered the body. So it starts off pretty standard, as you would expect. I'm a magician. I was born on the 29th of July 1912 in Aldershot. My father was a soldier and was killed in the war. My mother is at present living at Moor Crescent near Sheffield. After leaving school, I worked in the mines and afterwards as an assistant conjurer on stage. I came to London about 5 years ago and worked as a hall boy for Mrs. Duncan at Cadogan Square. I was next employed as a footman at W.S. Eyre in Kensington Palace Gardens, Notting Hill. I'm going to move on just slightly. Since this time, I have been doing cabaret work as a conjurer at various West End nightclubs. I'm still doing this work in addition to giving street performances. My work is in various West End nightclubs, and about a month ago, I was at the Caprice Club on Old Compton Street. It was about midnight when a girl named Sally, I don't know her surname, spoke to me and said that the deceased, which is Dutch Leia, he will refer to her as the deceased from this point, the deceased was very fond of me and said she would like to speak to me. Now, this is where they met. He chatted to her. They moved in with each other just basically about five days later. But that happened quite a lot in that era. So I'm going to move ahead with his statement here because he tells us all about what happened over the days leading up to that. But I want to show you about how he reports these events. So Let's go down. From 3 p.m. On the 8th of May, so this is the day of the murder. From 3 p.m, 8th of May, I went to the Cypress hairdressing salon on Dean Street, where I had a shave. To Hart's restaurant on Percy Street, where I had lunch. To the Dominion Theatre on Tottenham Court Road. To the Astor Cinema on Charing Cross Road. To the Dominion Cafe on High Street, Bloomsbury. And from here I walked to Piccadilly Circus. This was about 11:15 p.m. I then went to Shea Bobby's Club and stayed there until about 3:30 a.m. on Saturday the 9th. From the club, I went to the a snack bar called Jack's in Charing Cross Road, where I had a cup of coffee and arrived at 66 Old Compton Street at about 4 a.m. I whistled up as usual, but got no reply. So I walked around until about 5 a.m., where I again returned to this address, but could get no reply to my ringing. I again returned to the address at about 6 a.m, but could get no response from the ringing of the bell. I went to a cafe in High Street, Bloomsbury, and went back to the flat around 8:45 a.m. The door was locked, and the shopkeeper downstairs opened the street door and let me in. I went to the second floor and found the door to the room was locked. I knocked at the door and called, but could get no response. A puppy in the room was whining, and I went downstairs to the cafe and fetched my friend, Jock, and told him I thought something was wrong. He came upstairs with me and forced the door open to the room. Oops, sorry. Changing pages. I then discovered that Miss Hind was lying on the bed with head injuries. I went to Piccadilly and I informed a policeman. So, pretty standard, as you can see, he's going through all of his details, he's explaining different things about what happened that day and trying to be as factually accurate as possible, giving times, giving dates. Later on, he goes into some extra details, kind of backup information that the police need to know in order to work out what Dutch Leia is about and what she was doing around that time. He would say, she told me she had once lived with a man named Billy Sullivan, who was in jail for fighting. This is correct. She said she hated him. I understand from her that she often visited his mother. She told me that she was married and that she had a baby. I did not question this about her. And all she said was that she had her husband would have her back at any time and that he lived somewhere off the Edgware Road. So, not incorrect there. He's don't forget, he's only known her for about a month. He's got details about her. He still believes that she's of German origin. She's not. Everything about Billy Sullivan is correct. She didn't particularly like him. She was slightly afraid of him. This is backed up by Ruby Walker, her friend. Her former husband actually lived in Margate, not on the Edgware Road, but, you know, he hasn't known her that long, so it's easy that he would make small mistakes like that. Other than saying her father was a German, he would state, she did not speak of her family. She said her name was Leia Hines, spelt H-E-I-N-Z. Someone in the cafe told me that she had once lived with a coloured man named Jimmy Rich. That's correct. She did live with Jim Rich. Somewhere on Old Compton Street. She used to solicit in and around Wardour Street and Old Compton Street. She paid the rent of the room at 66 Old Compton Street, but she never gave me any money. I earn sufficient to keep myself. So I won't go into the rest of the statement there. As you can see, the police are asking him direct questions. He's coming back with answers. He's trying to be as factually accurate as possible. So let's go into the second statement. And this is 13th of May, 1936, so 4 days later, signed by Stanley Gordon King of 66 Old Compton Street. I'm going to read you the whole thing. It's only 2 pages long, but it's illuminating. Here we go. After reading the evening news tonight and seeing that paragraph there included the man in the Chinese robe, it refreshed my memory. Good line, that. It refreshed my memory. I now remember that Leia had recently told me of this man and the Chinese robe, and that he had brought her several gifts, including a pair of bright red stockings, which she told me she had worn with him on Victoria Station a few weeks ago. Also that he used to send her letters with a nom de plume, i.e. a fake name, to fix dates, to meet her, and that he used to give her checks whilst which she cashed without question, as the officials at the Westminster Bank had seen her several times and knew her. He had also asked her to go away with him on three occasions, and that he had taken her, in the Chinese robe that he gave her, to the Chinese restaurant on Wardour Street. On one occasion, she told me that he was very annoyed that she was not wearing the Chinese robe, which he asked her to wear that evening, but she could not get it, as she had given it to her mother. And after, she remarked that she was very sorry that she had ever let her mother have it. She also told me that she had taken this man to her room, which she told me was over G's restaurant in High Street, Bloomsbury. She also showed me a piece of notepaper, white with blue lines, on which were printed in ink, "Meet me at 8:30 p.m. at the usual place." Ooh, very sinister. I remember Leia saying that the bright red stockings which the man gave to her he had brought somewhere in Victoria, and I think also a dress which was bought around the same time. At the time she wore the red stockings, the man asked her to walk about Victoria Station, wearing them to show off. She also passed the remark that she was embarrassed whilst waiting for him to leave the gentleman's cloakroom at the station. I don't think we need to go into any details there about what the man was potentially doing in the gentleman's cloakroom at the station while she was parading up and down wearing the stockings, but it was certainly hot and sexy stuff. At the time she mentioned this to me, I said to her, "You must have had some pluck to do that." She said that she would wear anything that he had brought her because he would give her anything she asked for. She did tell me that she had recently let him down and that he had written her letters which she had ignored and that she was going to try and get in touch with him and would try and find out from the bank who he was. She did mention that he was of foreign origin. This statement is marked as read over by me, and it is said to be true. Signed, Stanley Gordon King. So it's a fascinating one, isn't it? It's like you could see how with the first one, the eight-pager, how factually accurate it is. He's stating exactly where he was. There's no stumbling over it. It's very clear. He's like, "I went here, I went there. This is the address. This is the timings. Blah, blah, blah." Everything is consistent. With this one, it's vague. We don't know who this man is. We don't know whether he existed. We don't know whether Leia actually told him this thing about the stockings or the dress that he bought him or the Chinese robe. It could be factually accurate. It could be complete lies. But that's the thing, is that Stanley opened up the newspaper or to the evening news. He read this article about the Chinese robe and instantly it's gone into his head. So, given the fact that she told, allegedly, that he says she, Dutch Leia, told Stanley this piece of information about the Chinese robe, but he read it in a newspaper and it refreshed his memory, where did that piece of information come from? Did it actually happen, or did Stanley, as an alibi, see that and just think, "That could be perfect for me, I could use that, we can discuss this mystery man who no one knows any name." There's no reference in the court records to any checks left behind in Leia's flat. There's no bank details in there, so what we're being told here could be complete lies, or he may have seen this piece of information, it may have jogged a memory of some kind, or maybe he thought it was true. So this is, unfortunately, the police have to deal with this factually. They take this on board. They obviously went out. They tried to find out who this mystery man was. They went to the Westminster Bank. They went searching for checks, which is going to be difficult because, you know, it won't be in Leia's name because she won't have a bank account. It'll be in his name. It's baffling. But unfortunately, so this is what happens when the press go out there. They make up some bullshit news story. This is not the only case. We'll, as we go through Soho Strangler Week, we'll find different bits and pieces of news articles out there, which are purely there for entertainment. Do you know, the problem is the press have to, they have to entertain us. They have to keep there. There has to be a constant cycle of new information constantly out there, because if they keep telling us the same thing, we won't buy the newspaper. We'll get bored. This is what's great about this story for the press, is it's serialized. It's, you've got one murder, then another murder, then another murder, then another, and it keeps ramping up. And that makes great for circulation, same as Jack the Ripper, only that was more condensed. It was murder than a murder than a murder, and for the press it was great. But when the murder stopped, the press hadn't got things to write, therefore the people aren't buying the newspapers, they lose interest, the press lose interest, everyone moves on. They go in search of the new story, the next exciting story which can raise their circulation. And unfortunately, this was one of those pieces where it changed eyewitness testimony, and key ones as well, because think about it, Stanley was the first person to find the body. And he is probably the only person who really knows what happened that night. So, if you enjoyed that, there's more to come. Your regular episodes of Murder Mile will return on Thursday the 27th of April, or a few days earlier via Patreon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.